So our second reading comes from Galatians chapter 5. For through the Spirit, by faith, we eagerly wait for the hope of righteousness. For in Christ Jesus, neither circumcision nor uncircumcision counts for anything. The only thing that counts is faith working through love. For you were called to freedom, brothers and sisters. Only do not use your freedom as an opportunity for self-indulgence, but through love become slaves to one another. For the whole law is summed up in a single commandment: you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Let us pray. God of all, please let our words be pleasing to you. Let our intentions be your own, and let our hearts be filled by you. Amen. Good morning. All right. A few days ago, we left our home in Madison, seven years, our friends, our jobs, etc., to follow that voice that said, "Whom shall I send?" And we responded just as Isaiah did, or at least we tried to. This endeavor came from the Lord. This is His plan, not ours. I can see that the biggest challenge for us during this year is to remember this. We are not in control of this journey. He is. God will get us where He wants us, and our job is to follow where He sends. This excerpt is from the first journal entry I made on my daily blog post over the past year. As we reflected on our time abroad and prepared for today, we realized that one of, if not the biggest, takeaways was not all the memories, the good times, amazing people, incredible sights, or opportunities to serve, but rather that our faith in God was reaffirmed daily. We had to put our trust in the Lord, and He never let us down.
Philadelphia 76ers fans, perhaps as much as any fan base, can understand this kind of faith. General Manager Sam Hinkie in 2013 stated to the fervid fan base, "We talk a lot about process, not outcome, and trying to consistently take all the best information you can and consistently make good decisions. Sometimes they work, and sometimes they don't. There has to be trust." ESPN reporter Pablo Torre took this a step further by stating the obvious but often unsaid. "It represents a big idea. There is no grander tension in sports, no life, than the one between process and results. It's both desperate and defiant, a phrase you might repeat to yourself while hiding inside a tank taking heavy artillery fire." While we were by no means taking enemy fire this last year, we were feeling the tension of process and results. We trusted that we had followed the right path, but we felt that agonizing sense of dread and of dread lurking in the back of our minds, ready to pounce at the first hint that the results or our abilities were lacking. We felt much like King David when he asked in prayer to God, "Who am I, Sovereign Lord, and what is my family that you have brought me this far?" It took a year of challenges, changes, and walking in faith to finally realize that the results we had sought were not God's, but our own, but that the results we got were far more rewarding and life-changing.
Guten Tag. As we sat in the Chicago airport at 11 p.m., waiting for our already delayed flight, we painfully watched as our children became more tired and irritable by the second. There were few fights, some tantrums, and lots of complaining, though not always from the children. We were all feeling so many different emotions, but they were amplified by exhaustion and uncertainty of what this journey was going to look like in action. Sure, the idea sounded great, but here we are sitting in an airport with three exhausted and restless children, waiting to see if we were going to survive the 8-hour overnight flight and living the next 12 months out of a backpack with unknown people who don't speak our language in places we have never even imagined. This first flight proved to be a lot for the kids. They were fidgety, noisy, and bored, and did not sleep. Things continued on this path during our 14-hour stay in London, with a hotel room no bigger than the size of a closet, and a 5 a.m. flight the next morning to Berlin. To say our children were exhausted would be a gross understatement. But we had to keep going. 3 days after leaving the U.S., we arrived in Schönebeck, a town of 31,000 in what would have been East Germany. And we were greeted by Johannes, the pastor of St. Jacobi Church, walking up the stairs to the train platform And stopping in front of us to count eins, zwei, drei, vier, fünf, just to be sure that he had the right family, because we had no picture, no nothing to know who he was or who we were. The biggest lesson we learned in Schönebeck came from a regular quote by Johannes. Next week. As I'm sure many of you know, Jeff and I love to get involved right away and that we don't idle well. So this journey was no different. On our second night in Schönebeck, we had dinner with Johannes and asked what work would we be doing, to which he replied, next week. We were eager to get started, and to be honest, to hear that response of next week was slightly frustrating, but it was what we needed to hear. Without even knowing it, Johannes gave us a lesson that would be carried through the rest of our journey. Next week taught us to be patient and enjoy the moment. After over a week of this response, we finally were tasked with helping out with Kinderbibeltage, which is their version of Vacation Bible School. The theme was Kinderstadt, Kid City. The kids had several stations from which to choose. Wood etching, painting, tie-dyeing, a petting zoo, a kitchen to bake goods, and then a store to sell them. Or the kids could earn Kindertale, which is kid money, by working at one of the stations and making something to be sold at the store. Or they could pay their Kindertale and create something of their own to take home. The event came to a dramatic close with a barbecue for families and a tie-dyed fashion show on top of a stage that would rival any rock concert. Jeff then began his work on Die Mauer, or the wall, while the kids and I headed for school. While they went to learn, I was an aide for a special needs child in a grade one class, which, to be honest, was quite humorous, given the fact that I don't speak German and he didn't speak English. So there was a lot of hand gestures and him slapping his head on, God, you're not understanding. Despite these both being volunteer projects, I think both Jeff and I were working almost full-time jobs. The kids made wonderful friends at school, and we were so amazed at how well they adapted to their new life surrounded by people who didn't speak their language. When we weren't working, we were surrounded by a new family of friends, enjoying meals or drinks 3 to 4 times a week, and experiencing their life in this small town built on salt mines. It was truly amazing. And as our time came to a close with an American Thanksgiving dinner in honor of Erntedankfest, which is a harvest festival, our hearts ached. I don't think we were prepared for how difficult it would be to say goodbye to our new friends we had just met 10 weeks earlier. It was so easy to say hello and yet so hard to say goodbye.
Until it was time to say hello again, albeit in another language, in another country, on another continent. Sawat dee krap. Thailand afforded us a whole new challenge. While we were once again facing another country in which little English would be spoken, we were now faced with the challenge of not even having any idea of with whom we would be living. The original setup would have put us with a family in one of the local villages, but they had all taken ill, and we were bumped to another house. As it turned out, this was a true blessing, as we got to stay with Padiwat Thanapasan, the father of our point of contact in Thailand, and truly one of the most generous people we had ever met. Wat lived with his mother and housekeeper in Wang Sa, Nan Province. Wat was once a cook in Chicago, which gave him some working knowledge of English, had been a lawyer, former mayor of Wang Sa, and now owns a construction company. Thailand taught us a new kind of patience, the ability to be patient in the face of constant change. Much like Johannes had done for us in Germany, Wat gave us a few days to get acclimated, despite our recurring requests for a schedule of what we would be doing and when. While he didn't say next week, he did gently remind us that everything would come in due time. Our primary service role was to teach English at the neighboring town's preschool and primary school. Kids were aged 3 to 12. We also learned from Wat that we would have the honor of teaching at one of Wang Sa's Buddhist temples. While we were excited to get started, we found out that the sheer volume of Buddhist holidays, our schedule at the temple would be fluid, shall we say. 1 week, 2 days. Another week, no days. And from then on, hit or miss. We learned in short order that we would not be able to plan our weeks in advance, but rather would simply ask on Monday where would we be and when. Little did we know that the ability to just wait and trust would be a tremendous lesson later in the trip. Our foray into teaching English started a bit slow, but we quickly got the hang of it. Sarah became an expert in laying out lesson plans, which incorporated games, songs, and concepts which were fun for us to teach and for the kids to learn. The school children, who were very nervous and shy when they first met us, were laughing, dancing, and running around with us by the end of the day. Moreover, the inclusion of David, Lucy, and Anjali in leading classes was incredibly rewarding and impactful. The kids in the school adored them and could not wait to see them each morning, giving out hugs and high fives all around. We even got to celebrate Halloween there. Our family dressed up in the best costumes we could devise and then practiced trick-or-treating with the kids. Despite a few hiccups, Thai Halloween was a hit. We even shared a little television culture with the older kids by watching The Addams Family. While they may not have understood the entire show, there were definitely some laughs from the audience. As with all good things, our time came to an end. Before leaving, we were treated to a traditional ceremony in which a priest of sorts offers prayers and blessings, and then strings, such as these, are tied around our wrists as signs of well wishes and blessings. This service brought many smiles and even a few tears as we readied ourselves to say goodbye to our new friends. What seemed like Watt's entire family took us to the airport and waited with us until our flight was ready to depart. We laughed and shared memories, then cried as we went to our gate. More lessons learned, we were ready to take the voyage to our next stop, India.
Namaste. We learned quickly upon arriving in New Delhi that while patience was still necessary, the value of trusting in God's will was paramount. We arrived in Pantnagar, India, and were greeted by our driver, arranged by Clifton, our contact at the Good Shepherd Agricultural Mission, aka the farm. We had gotten used to not knowing what to expect, and this was no different. So we piled into the SUV, Jeff in the passenger seat, and all four of the kids and I in the back seat. Lucy conveniently perched on my lap in the center seat. So no seatbelts. Within 3 minutes of being in the car, I found myself wondering if we were even going to make it to the farm. Driving in India is like nothing I have ever experienced or seen. It is fast, erratic, and completely devoid of any road rules. The center line is just a mere suggestion, if there was a center line. So with Bollywood music blasting over the radio and our driver playing on his phone with one hand while swerving in and out of traffic with the other hand permanently affixed to the horn, I found myself laughing. I had to put all my faith in God that we would arrive safely to the farm, and laughter, I think, was all I could manage. But we did, and when we arrived, we were greeted with hugs and high fives and the smiling faces of kids all around us. We spent the next 2 months finding random jobs to do and to help out on the mission. We wrapped Christmas gifts. We organized a school supply closet. We organized their new library at the school, cleaned up the mission. We helped with re-roofing the boys' hostel, and we regularly cooked meals and did dishes. The kids were quick to make new friends and find ways to help, too. There were some major adjustments, though, to living on the mission. Fairly rigid schedule, hand-washing all laundry, bucket baths, chai 4 times a day, which, gotta be honest, that wasn't much of a chore. But we adjusted quickly, and we soon fell in love with life on the farm and the children. God had placed us there for a very specific reason, to love the children and to show them how important they are to this world. For me, our time on the farm was the reason that we were sent on this mission. God needed me there for those 2 months, and I just didn't realize it until after we left. I had the opportunity to build a lasting relationship with one of the girls from the mission. Unfortunately, she had experienced some severe trauma and was having a lot of difficulty when we arrived. And I believe with all my heart that God put me where he could use me. And with his guidance and grace, I built an amazing relationship and shared stories and experiences, and watched as God changed her life. She went from nightly nightmares and a total loss of hope to live to becoming the strong and independent woman she is now. I didn't do anything different. I didn't say anything that other people hadn't already said to her for years. But the difference was that God was working through me, and it was just amazing to be a part of. And if we accomplished nothing else during this year, I was part of one of the most amazing transformations I've ever seen. God used my traumatic past to change someone's life, and it still amazes me that God can turn a negative experience for one person into a positive and life-changing for another. The Good Shepherd Agricultural Mission is not what you would expect from an orphanage. It is a family that God brought together not by blood, but through his love. There were many times that I felt that I wasn't able to show these kids how much love I actually had for them, in part because they kept showing the same to me. And I remember saying to Jeff many times, aren't we supposed to be the ones giving? Yet I regularly felt that I was receiving more than I was actually able to give. It was very hard to leave India, and despite our best efforts to extend our visa, we had to leave. Ayubawan, Sri Lanka, was hot and humid beyond anything I had ever experienced. But the people were welcoming and kind. One of the first things we learned upon arriving at the Kaskota Sea Turtle Conservation Project was that we were going to be without hot water. Thankfully, with the stifling heat and humidity, the hot water was not missed at all. Actually, the cold water was quite refreshing. Here we worked alongside wonderful people from all over the world while learning about the life cycles of various sea turtles and how the conservation project was trying to help increase their chances of survival. This job was dirty, smelly, difficult, sweaty, and sandy, yet absolutely amazing. Twice a week, we cleaned turtle tanks, which meant draining the tanks and standing in turtle droppings and fish bits while scrubbing the algae off the walls of the tanks with cheap brushes. We dug holes in the sand up to our armpits daily to bury the turtle eggs delivered each morning. We cleared out old nests, which meant digging up the holes again in the sand, hoping to not stick your finger in an unhatched rotten egg, which Anjali was very happy to experience. The upside to this job was that sometimes by moving the sand just a small bit, we would come across baby turtles digging themselves out on their own. All of this dirty work was worth it when we watched 100 of these amazing reptiles scamper across the beach, making their way to the sea each night, knowing that we were part of the efforts to save sea turtles and give them a fighting chance of survival.
Bună ziua. Our last stop, Brașov, Romania. Although at the time we had no idea that this was the last place that we would be. While we were in India, we'd received a message from the group running the program in Romania, Firm Foundations, that they were very short-staffed in the spring and were putting out a call to any available volunteers. Simultaneously, we were dealing with some questions about our plans in Kenya, so we felt like this might be God's way of kind of nudging us to meet the call. We reached out to Firm Foundations and to the Kibera Girls Soccer Academy to see if everyone would be okay if we switched our travel plans and went to Romania in March, and then to Kenya in May. Surprisingly, while our prior communications were often slow, in this instance, both groups immediately responded that this would be perfect. Firm Foundations welcomed us with open arms and the largest living arrangements we'd had since leaving Madison. The two-bedroom apartment included a full kitchen and a living room. With so much space, we hardly knew what to do with ourselves. Unlike at our previous stops, we took only one day to settle in before Sarah and I started working. Our supervisor, Katie, lived in the apartment above us. Sarah and I were trained as supervisors as well, a role we had not expected but were happy to accept, and proceeded to alternate shifts during the week. Our mission was three-pronged. Primarily, we handled shifts at the Brașov Children's Hospital. A typical shift was going floor to floor, five of those, and asking the nurses how many children needed diapers, leaving the requisite set behind for four scheduled changes for the day, and then settling in at the digestive and pulmonary units to change diapers and play with the kids whose parents could not stay with them. Second, we handled sorting, storing, and delivering donations in the form of clothing, blankets, and toys, which came regularly from sources all over the world. We would bundle sets of clothes, underwear, shoes, socks, and then deliver them to needy families on Fridays. Finally, a few times each month, we would help at the after-school extended learning program in Budila, a very poor village on the outskirts of Brașov, home to a group of Romas, or gypsies as they are often called. These people also represented the bulk of the needy who were most reliant on the other two prongs of our service. While one of us was on a shift, the other was at home leading teaching duties to our kids. Twice a week, our kids would join us either at the after-school program or at the main office for clothes sorting and baby bundle packaging. As had been the case at all of our previous stops, everyone contributed the most that they could. Not surprisingly, Sarah and I would argue that this was one of our most favorite service opportunities. While we abhorred the treatment of the Roma people, we absolutely loved the chance to spend time with the infants and toddlers. They would light up with excitement when we entered the room and would engage intently with us. We'd read to them, we'd walk the halls, and sometimes feed them. Sadly, though, our departure was always heart-wrenching. Many of the kids were regular visitors, sent to the hospital because their families were too poor or otherwise incapable of meeting their needs. As a result, the older children were used to the routine and knew when it was time for us to leave that further human contact would be limited or non-existent until the next day. I have dealt with my share of crying children, but none so much as these that hurt my soul. I suppose then it was fitting that Sarah and I probably put even more effort into this service because we could see and feel the difference every day. This was also why, when the end of our planned stay in April had arrived, that we did not hesitate to offer to stay one more month when Firm Foundations let us know that they would be short-staffed again in May. We contacted Kibera again and were told that if we were needed in Romania, that we should absolutely stay. While we hoped that we were not abandoning the mission on which we had originally set out to accomplish, we also felt that we needed to trust God's plans. Romania still needed us, and Kenya had given its blessings. We continued our service in May and began looking to wrap up in Kenya for our last month of service in June. However, we learned that perhaps this plan was not best suited for us. There were and are many projects underway at Kibera, and we got the distinct impression that our visit would be more just that, a visit rather than help. Sarah and I began looking for other volunteer programs throughout Europe and even tried to extend our visa for one more month to stay in Romania. But at every turn, the door was shut. Just as we had experienced at the start of our journey, we put our faith back in God and prayed for an answer. As more and more doors shut or our knocks went unanswered, we finally made the decision that despite what we may have wanted, our journey was over. 4 days before our visas were to expire in Romania, we booked flights and made our plans to return home. And as had always been the case, it was for the best. God put us where we needed to be. We were able to find good flights, a place to live, and to spend 2 weeks with our families in the United States before coming back to Madison. God gave us what we needed, when we needed it, and in his own way, showed us that it was okay to be done for now. We had fought in every way we could to do one more month of service, but only because we had said we would. We learned that that was not what was meant for us, and upon accepting that, we felt a great sense of relief and even a sense of excitement for the next step of the process, coming home.
There were many days of our journey that were a struggle, but God never promised that it would be easy. He did promise to take care of us and provide us for what we needed, which he always did, from bucket baths in India to cold water showers in the stifling heat of Sri Lanka. We learned not to look so much into the future, but rather enjoy the journey and the path laid immediately before us. As hard as it was to not know when we were leaving one place or where we were even going to go next, we always knew that he was before us and behind us. He was creating this path and leading us on it. We just had to walk it and to have faith that he would get us where we belonged.
The biggest challenge for us coming home, besides the reverse culture shock of returning to the land of plenty, has been reminding ourselves to keep the faith. While abroad, it was easy. We relied on our faith that God would provide all that we needed. Coming home, we felt like CVS or Costco would do just fine, which makes it hard to remember to be reliant on God, but we are striving to remember the one key difference between us and those Philadelphia 76ers. You see, when Sam Hinkie told those fans to trust the process, it was in pursuit of an elusive NBA championship, a one-time reward that would be the culmination of sacrifice and patience. For followers of Christ, there is no championship per se, rather a lifelong pursuit of living a life like and for Christ. It won't always be easy, and there will be times that you ask the tough question, how can I still be a fan of Jesus when my life just hits rock bottom? But we keep returning to the same mantra, trust the process, trust the process. Because while Sam Hinkie is no longer an NBA general manager, and the 76ers still won't be raising any banners maybe anytime soon, we will always have the greatest of champions and the best team ever to suit up. God's process is never fleeting, never failing, always faithful, always graceful. Amen.